Hello. I don't know if I'm here or not, actually, but I'm settling, so I hope that everybody else is too. And we're just going to quickly introduce ourselves and share a few thoughts on the retreat, just to give you a little bit of a sketch of what to expect, and maybe some attitudes and approaches to practice. So we'll make it quite short this evening, because most of us, I guess, have travelled quite a long way and are fairly tired and thinking more about your pillow than your meditation cushion. But we'll just give a few words and also a little guided meditation and start by saying hello. So my name is Venerable Chanda, and I'm a fully ordained nun in, I guess, the Theravada tradition. But one of the privileges of being a fully ordained nun is that actually we go back to the time of the Buddha, because there's been a big gap in the tradition for about 1,000 years. So it's probably more accurate to say we go back to the early Buddhist tradition from 2,600 years ago. And of course, there's a bit of a journey to get to that point, which may come up throughout the retreat. And currently I'm living in Oxford and starting a monastery there where women can train towards full bhikkhuni ordination, but all people can come and stay as guests. So, and I'm here because Bernard invited me, and I thought it would be lovely to teach with you, because you're quite knowledgeable in the suttas, and I thought it would be something a little bit fresh. So, now to introduce Bernard.
Thank you, Bernard. Can you hear me all right? Yes? Good, thank you. So welcome, a very warm welcome to all of you, whoever you are, however you are, please. Allow yourself to be welcome. I'm really, really happy to be here next to Venerable Chanda. As she said, my name is Bernard. I come obviously not from the UK. So just to name as well a little bit of where I'm speaking from and who I am and what's nowadays called one's intersectionality. I'm a white, gay, white male from South Europe, which is where I live, in Barcelona. And I have a sort of now former lifetime as a jazz musician, feels like ages ago now. I've been teaching retreats for quite a few years. And I'm also a Buddhist scholar. So I guess this is some of the identities I currently inhabit in some way. And obviously they shape where I speak from. So just to be upfront about that. And yeah, we thought we might start by talking a little bit of why this particular theme of enjoying the path, and why I asked Venerable Chanda to teach this with me, and very luckily for me and all of us, she agreed. I guess when we come to meditation practice or Buddhism, we have the sense that it's about suffering and pain and overcoming it and eradicating it. But it's quite a suffering-centered sort of discourse. And that makes a lot of sense, because oftentimes we do come to this practice because there is some sort of pain in our lives or dissatisfaction, and we want to engage with it in different ways. And this brings us to the practice. So this will be the case for a number of you. And it was certainly the case for myself. This suffering that motivates a quest for something else. And with all the virtue in this, it can also emphasize our tendency to fixate on what's wrong, on the negative, on what's hard and difficult, what this negative bias that we have. And just focusing on pain and suffering and difficulty. This may increase sometimes some personal tendencies that we have. I mean, it's quite natural, and there's an evolutionary reason why we fixate on what's wrong. And there may be also personal idiosyncrasies. They may have to do with our upbringing. Certainly in my case, did not grow up in a family that was particularly fond of celebrating the good things. It was like, yeah, have a nice time, but quietly. Don't go too far. And there's also a cultural element in this. Europe had this movement called the Romanticism, and it has had a great impact in our collective imagination and ideas. The idea that it is through pain and suffering that we get to our true self, or that this image that the artists need to suffer a great deal, and that's where great art comes from. It's from the pain and the suffering. It's not from the joyful and light states and from the bliss. It's from the hard stuff. And we've inherited, consciously or not, all of these ideas to one degree or another. And then Buddhism may seem to amplify some of this. And particularly, you may have heard the term Vipassana, the Vipassana movement, sometimes translated insight meditation. It's a particular form of Buddhism the last few centuries that has a certain suspicion when it comes to pleasant states of body and mind. It has a certain suspicion. And so all this together has been part of my story, personal and spiritual. And I think sometimes it's true that we do suffer a lot of the times because we are attached to certain pleasures and we are addicted to certain pleasures. But I will talk more about this in a couple of days. Maybe even a better diagnosis of our condition is that we are very addicted to suffering. We're quite good at it, but we're not so good at having a nice time for more than a few minutes, you know, and it's a lovely Sunday afternoon, and you start thinking, but tomorrow, Monday morning, no, we're not very good at this. I don't know about you, but I'm not that good at it. I think I'm quite more programmed to have a bad time. Might be just me, I don't know. And so, what's the other side of engaging with the difficult is also engaging with what's not difficult. I mentioned I'm also a scholar, and in my research I started seeing that there was a lot of emphasis on how pleasant and unpleasant feelings get us into trouble. How they can create, trigger and feed patterns of attachment, craving, clinging, and also aversion, hatred, denial. And I asked myself, but how do they help the path to liberation? How do things that feel good help us in the path to liberation? And so in a way my studies and my research started changing the way I viewed my practice and the way I understood my practice. And this is how we get here. Through that study, starting to change my practice, starting to think differently and thinking more in terms of what's nice and enjoyable and blissful about the path and how can it help us. I always give the same example. If, let's say, you decide to go vegan, how are you more likely to succeed? If you think of this as a sort of self-imposed kind of penance that you have to, and even if it's horrible, they'll just stick with it. Or if you find ways to cook delicious vegan meals, how are you going to stick with it? So we do have a natural tendency to go to that which feels good, and it can be used for the purpose of liberation and freedom. And this is what we'll be talking about. We can use these tendencies. We can use these tendencies skillfully. Whereas sometimes in some of your background, you may have heard more the idea of just being equanimous to anything that comes your way. And that is part of it. But we can also use these tendencies. And if you have been to certain countries in Asia, and you may have seen that there, and especially for lay people, Buddhism is all about the happiness and the good things and the joy and the prosperity. There's a different flavor to it. So we can look at this from different angles. We can center the idea of pain and how we embrace it or move beyond it or stop creating so much suffering for ourselves and others. Or we can center the joy and the well-being. It's the two sides of the same story. So this is how I came to be more interested in practicing and teaching in this way. And this is how I came to suggest to Venerable Chanda if she'd be interested in teaching this with me. So I guess it's now her turn to explain why she said yes.
Right. Well, first I said yes because I thought you were quite cool and I was really pleased with the research that you've been doing that emphasises the pleasure. Because for me, I came to the practice when I was 20 after a very painful and kind of fraught teenage search for I didn't know what, really. But really a deep question of why I was here and what was the meaning of all of this. Because suffering certainly can't be denied. And I couldn't deny that it was arising in me. I couldn't pin it on any particular cause. And that gave me the feeling there was something wrong with me. And yet something inside me knew there must be a reason for this. Like, human beings cannot be born into this world just to hurt and to inflict all kinds of horrific pain on others. There must be a reason and there must be a way to respond to this that is compassionate and that makes meaning of that. So when I first travelled to India and I heard about meditation, I was attracted by the thought of sitting with my mind for 10 days with no distractions and just looking at what was going on inside. And I wondered, I had this question, like, will my mind kind of dig itself into a hole or will it figure out how to lift itself and how to bring about that happiness for itself? So I did my first retreat after probably a couple of years of having every kind of sensual pleasure available. I wasn't always a nun. So this is when I was a lay person, and I had relationships. I had treks to the most beautiful Himalayan mountains and full moon parties and all kinds of things you do when you're young and a bit wild. And for me, it almost felt like a checklist. It's like, it's not this. It's not that. Did this, didn't work. And eventually I just thought, I have to look at what's going on inside. So the practice, when I first heard that the Buddha taught that suffering is an inevitable part of life, it's part and parcel of being born, and there's a way out of that suffering, I was in for it, I really thought this is it. And it brought me enormous relief. And the practice for me unfolded through the Vipassana tradition for about the first 10 to 14 years of my practice. And as Bernard said, it was very much this emphasis on experiencing the different sensations, the different feelings, whether pleasant, painful, or somewhere in between, and remaining equanimous to that, remaining calm, remaining balanced in the midst of, difficulty, distress, boredom, tiredness, that kind of in-between kind of slightly boring state of mind. And yet the pleasure, again, was seen as something to beware of. Like, the emphasis was much more on learning not to react to the pain. And that in itself gave me a great deal of benefit. I found that I really could relate to life and to others in a much more grounded and balanced way. But there was this kind of fear that if pleasure arose, we had to be equanimous to that. And as a result of that, the mind developed a lot of insight, but not so much the deep, blissful states of mind that I later started hearing about. So I thought, well, what is that? Because if you open the suttas, and I got into the suttas after probably more seriously around the time I ordained, and you open the suttas and it talks about so many kinds of happiness, so many kinds of bliss, starting from the very subtle blisses of just living a good ethical life, all the way to these deep, sustaining, fulfilling, quenching blisses or happinesses of the deep meditation. I thought, maybe something here is missing, because the Buddha's certainly emphasizing happiness. Of course, that's the other side of pain, right? Every time we let go of a bit of suffering, you know, when we let go of an unwholesome habit pattern to release something more spacious, perhaps, you know, we stop seeing a person in a certain way and realize that actually they've been quite a good friend to us in the past, you know, or sometimes you can wake up in a bad mood, your whole life looks like a big disaster. You wake up in a good mood, or you've had a nice meal, good company. Oh yeah, that ex-boyfriend, or they weren't so bad. You know, anyway, if we hadn't gone out, then I might not be who I am today, right? So we see life completely differently. So I started thinking, maybe it's time to start cultivating that happiness, as the Buddha suggested. And then I realized he's actually emphasizing a different kind of happiness. And we'll get into this more tomorrow, but he did say there are certain happinesses to be that are inevitable part of life, you know, the happiness through the senses. But he said we shouldn't pursue that. And I think it's important to highlight that. He didn't say they're wrong. He wasn't making an ethical judgment. But he did say don't pursue them, don't cultivate them, because you simply won't find fulfillment there. But on the other hand, there's a happiness of the mind, which is quite apart from sensual pleasure. And he said, is not to be feared. So a lot of the pleasant sensations related to your goodness, your inner virtue, even related to things like inspiration from hearing a talk, or just being in a group like this, with, you know, where you can hopefully feel safe, are actually wholesome happinesses. And he said that should be pursued. It's not to be feared. And so my practice started to change, and I started to realize that this kind of happiness is actually not something you can create, but something that happens the more you let go. The more you let go of the things that are obstacles to that happiness that we all have inside. So it's quite a subtle practice, and it involves tuning into a different kind of joy. And there's a lot of wisdom involved in that as well. So this is probably going a little far too soon when you're a bit tired, but I guess I want to express my enthusiasm for this, because it's very much the Buddha's teaching, that he's teaching a way out of pain and suffering, and it's connected to the suffering we experience. For me, this is the most exciting part, that he's saying the suffering of life. And I like the word suffering. Some people like recoil a bit and say you should say unsatisfactoriness, but it includes anything, right? From a little bit of frustration or not quite getting things right, all the way to like the loss of a loved one, chronic disease, you know, unexpected death in the family. It's the despair as well. And the Buddha said, no matter what, when we see that in a universal perspective, that this is our human condition, and we hear the teachings of the Dhamma, then that gives us inspiration to follow a path towards freedom and release. So the two are connected. And there's nothing gone wrong. And this is an incredibly positive message. So I think it's a wonderful topic that we are exploring together. And it also means that whatever you experience is welcome. It's part of the path. So I guess that's enough about my reasons for accepting this invitation, and a little bit of an overview about what it's about. But I think now we were going to go into a little bit of guidance for people here who may not have come on retreat before. And earlier today, myself and Bernat were looking through your forms and realized a lot of you are here for the first time on a meditation retreat, especially a silent one. And it's quite a young group too, and please excuse me if you don't identify as so young, me neither. But it's a really nice mix, and everybody's welcome. You know, it feels really nice to have such a diverse crowd. And since there are so many people new, I wanted to just take away any pressure that you might be putting on yourself by saying that don't worry about enjoying the path. This is called How to Enjoy the Path. And the last thing we want to do is say, right, now I've got to enjoy the path. I've got to enjoy my meditation, because immediately you're putting a condition before your happiness, before your relaxation and your ability just to be. So the invitation really to everybody, I would say first, is just to try and learn to relax. My teacher would tell me off already, because he says, never try. You just invite yourself to relax. And I was listening to a Qigong teaching earlier today, and it was really beautiful, because there's a particular sequence of practices which are all about aiding the body to relax. And in the Chinese characters, the word for those practices, I don't know if it's the direct translation of the word relax, is something that's like a pine tree. You know, the sort of arms, limbs of a pine? And another of the little symbols on the character is like long hair. So you can imagine you have long hair. I have no hair, but you know, you can imagine when I had long hair. So it's this kind of downward movement, but also there's a rootedness to that. So we can just allow ourselves to feel that groundedness, but also to recognize we're supported by the earth. You know, there is a base to the body. We can really settle into our body and also allow any tensions, you know, any muscular holding that you might not need right now, just to relax. So there's a spaciousness to that. And, you know, again, don't take that as something to do. It's something that happens when you feel safe. You know, for me, I've noticed that when I feel safe, when I feel a sense of belonging, then I can relax. Yeah. And every one of you belongs where you are right now. That's why your application succeeded and why you're here. You know, your body's here, you have a room to stay in, you have food every day, it's nourishing, I hope. You have these beautiful supportive conditions, a whole team of coordinators looking out for you, two of us here. If anything needs to be addressed, you can write us a message. So it is a safe place and you belong. Your body belongs, and allow your mind to belong, because your mind belongs with you. You know, we sometimes, stigmatize our minds. You know, we think they're not quite good enough, or you know, they should be different, or you maybe came here even to fix it up. But your mind belongs just as it is. It's the product of cause and effect. So allow your mind to just be, because happiness never comes about by fighting. It only comes about by making peace. So nobody's judging you in a place like this. You have your eyes closed a lot of the time. Most people have their eyes downcast when they're walking around. They're not looking at you. The only judge really is yourself. And, you know, don't even judge yourself for that. These are just habits that we have cultivated for far too long. So no one's judging, no one's measuring. You don't need to measure yourself. You are in the right place. And the retreat schedule is also a kind of container. It's also something to help you feel safe. You know, you'll be told what to do. There'll be a bell before a sit or a walking meditation. And just recognize that this is there to support you. It's there to give you a sense of being held. But it's not there to kind of impose a rigid structure on you that your body may not really be inclined towards. So for the first day especially, and it's only a short retreat, but at least for the first day, try and rest as much as you need to, because what I've noticed in most people is an immediate cause for the lack of happiness is a mind that's simply worn out, a body that's exhausted. You know, it's very hard to feel relaxed. It's very hard to feel joy when you're just too tired, really, to, you know, even to put your clothes on to get out the door. So take the opportunity to rest when you need to. You know, to enjoy the walking, enjoy the beautiful surroundings, and just to arrive here, to feel that sense of groundedness as well as space. Yeah, those two elements of relaxation, groundedness and spaciousness, like the pine tree with its roots deep in the soil and the beautiful pine needles flowing down. And then the next thing that I would just like to emphasize, really, or invite you to be aware of on this retreat, is your attitude to meditation, your attitude towards your mind. Attitude, in a way, is another word for relationship. How are you relating to what's arising right now? And can we be gentle with it? Can we encourage ourselves rather than push or criticize ourselves for not matching up to our ridiculously impossible standards? Can we just be gentle and kind? Bring that forgiveness. You know, life isn't perfect. You're not perfect. We're certainly not perfect. I'm pretty sure of that. I've been watching my mind for 28 years and I've never seen it behave perfectly. I don't know about you.
Nope.
But
not yet, not yet.
I'm still waiting. But I encourage my mind. If I didn't encourage my mind, it would have rebelled by now for sure. So this is known as a soft mind. I like this analogy of a soft mind. It's a mind that's receptive rather than looking for something special to happen. So again, try not to put those conditions before your happiness. I'll be happy if only my knee stops hurting, or if only I can get up one day. You know, if only I could sit like that other person, then I'd be happy. Or maybe, if only I could have my mobile phone. Believe me, that won't work. And also, we develop a heart of loving kindness. And in the Metta Sutta, when you read the Buddha's words, there's a beautiful line in that sutta that says, a person with loving kindness is easily satisfied, not proud or demanding in nature. The word content is in there as well. That probably comes a bit later in the path. But can we be not demanding with ourselves, with our experience, with what we expect from this retreat? You know, is it good enough just to be here, just to have given yourself this time? Because that is a really beautiful gift. And one thing we all have in common, if you're not feeling that sense of safety and belonging yet, is that we're all here with incredibly pure intentions to give ourselves this opportunity to grow beautiful states of mind, beautiful qualities, to live harmlessly, to curtail our speech almost completely, so that when we do speak, we just speak from the heart about our direct experience. But we don't disturb one another. We offer this gift of silence, the gift of kindness. So we're here to unburden our minds. And that is the way to the happiness that the Buddha praised. It's not a happiness of accumulation, of stimulation, of agitation. A lot of happiness is, right? So-called happiness. Someone came to our monastery and they realized after a week with us, they said, oh, I always thought happiness was excitement. But now I realize it's something much subtler, much softer than that. So we're unburdening our minds from pressure, our minds from being so demanding, and we're learning to be content even amidst the pain. So be content when the pain comes to visit. You know, it's a chance to get to know it. It's a chance to learn how to relate wisely to that difficulty you may experience and find the joy and the inspiration in the path. So we also call that unconditional mindfulness, being aware unconditionally, no matter what arises, we try to meet it. But we're very, very gentle, very, very kind. So I think that's probably plenty for now. And it leads into Bernard's next part, hopefully, which is maybe a bit more about the way the silence can support you, because that might be a little bit unfamiliar to some. So,
thank you. I really liked what you said about the softness. I just remembered last October I was in Thailand and with my partner we went to a temple and we got a sort of fortune-telling message, you know, and mine said, may the softness win over the hardness. And just 2 days later I visited a teacher who teaches a lot of metta, kindness, and describes it as softening your contact with whatever you are meeting. And there was that sense of softness that we invite you to allow and summon these days. And speaking of supporting conditions and silence, nowadays a lot of noise happens through things like this, which I'm sorry to be showing you, and you'll be seeing it throughout the retreat. I'm not trying to be provocative, but devices and screens. So it's digital silence. I like languages a lot, and I remember there was an article many years ago, I still remember, of, you know, that kind of article, 20 words from other languages that we should adopt. And one of them was from the Inuktitut language. And the word is Iktsuarpok. Iktsuarpok. Now, Iktsuarpok has a very interesting meaning. Iktsuarpok means to repeatedly come out of the igloo to see if your visitor is approaching. You have to think that igloos usually don't have windows. So you have to, are they here yet? Are they here yet? And this is what we do with our phones, isn't it? Did they see my post on Instagram? Do I have a like? I just checked my email 10 minutes ago and I have the notifications on, but is there an email I missed? So our patterns reside in these devices. And it is our enthusiastic recommendation that you let go of them for these days. Otherwise, let's think, how much of a retreat are we going to have if we keep doing basically the same things we do in our daily life? You've given yourself a great gift coming here. There's a lot of effort and planning and finance and arrangements with work, family, whatever, to come here and have this time. And in a way, our addiction to devices makes retreat very easy, because you switch off your device and that's 50% of the work done. And so approach it in this way. It's like, this is this very simple act that already gets me a long way. There's this story in the suttas of someone, it's a sort of trope, it happens in many ways, but there's a practitioner goes to the forest, you know, to practice, but then they keep thinking of the same things and people at home. I don't know, that sounds familiar. And then they're kind of losing their inspiration, and then a deity from the forest, a sort of equivalent to a fairy, a deva, visits them and sings a song of inspiration that begins with these verses. Said, you entered the forest seeking solitude, and yet your mind keeps flying outwards. So let's create supporting conditions for ourselves and make it easier to be here. You see this basket in front of us. It's not decoration. It is our invitation to hand in your phone or tablet. Or you have papers and rubber bands so you can write your name. Yeah, so here is our invitation. Think about the opportunity you've given yourself and how can you help that gift. This is going to be here until the end of this session. If you want to make it even more meaningful, you may kind of bow to the basket when you put the phone as a sign of kind of the act of renunciation, of letting something go and saying, I can be without this. I can be without this. Unburdening, as Venerable Chanda was saying, unburdening. We will again bring it tomorrow morning, because we realize that some of you may wish now to switch off your phone, but it's good sometimes to tell a couple of people, I won't be available in the next couple of days, so you may make your last arrangements tonight, and then the basket will be here tomorrow morning, and then we will take it to safety, I think at 10:15 after the morning instructions. But you can always hand in your phone. You can always pop into reception and offer your devices. And just a couple of thoughts more about the retreat. I like to think of a retreat, if I have to define it, as a situation in which everything is explicitly an occasion for practice. We aim to practice all the time and be mindful, but a retreat is that situation in which this is explicit. From the sitting or still meditation, or the walking and moving meditation, to the meals, to queuing for the meals, to going to the loo. That's actually in the suttas, that you should go to the loo mindfully. It's there. So everything is an occasion for practice. But there's another element in a retreat, which is that this is a shared endeavor. And so a retreat is something that we co-create. And I like to think of being on retreat also as a way of being and dwelling differently. So we are going to be doing different things. At least my daily life does not look like this schedule. But it's not so much that we're doing different things, but we are being differently. And in this dwelling differently, we can infuse the space with certain qualities: kindness, patience, appreciation for what's provided, as Venerable Chanda was mentioning, really important in a retreat. Because you may get to the breakfast line and go, "Ah, oh, they don't have the jam I like, you know, or these biscuits, someone took the last one, and But what is offered? What is provided? What is here?" So this attitude of appreciation, of generosity, in maybe not taking the last biscuit. "Oh, I've had one, I could have another. I think everyone has had one, but okay, there were 15 cookies and then that's so many people." It's like, maybe I'll just, you know, offer it to someone else. So in the way that we hold ourselves, we are co-creating this retreat by infusing the space with these beautiful qualities of the heart and mind. And again, just to reiterate the message of softness, listen to your needs, especially the first night. Just go to bed right after this session and give yourself plenty of time to rest. And listen to your needs in the first day, and at the same time, lean on the schedule as a support. Surrender to the form. I still remember my first retreat, and what a relief it was to just completely surrender to the form. I didn't even have to look at the clock. I heard the bell, I go here. I hear another bell, I go there. Just like letting myself be carried. So some of you may look at the schedule and go, "Good." And some may have felt, "Oh dear, this is a lot." Or you can do this. And you can surrender to the form and let this be a friend. And again, also listen to your needs. So, just to finish with a quick recap or overview of what the retreat is going to consist in. As you have seen, we will have instructions in the morning, we will have a talk first thing in the afternoon, and the guided meditation. And there will be group interviews. I don't really like the word interview. We're not interviewing you. These are group meetings. But this is a chance that each of you will have once during the retreat to meet with either Venerable Chanda or myself in the small group to just reflect and your practice, how it's going, how is the retreat going, what's happening in your practice. And it's a very important element of a retreat for me. I think there's a lot of learning that happens in those meetings, either from just trying to articulate what's happening in your experience, there's learning there, or from listening to what others are sharing, there's also a lot of learning there. So you will be in a group, and we will have them every day at 10:15 in the morning. except tomorrow. Because we realized that the first day in the morning, still, you know, there hasn't been time. So tomorrow we will have the groups at 4:45 in the afternoon, which is after the guided meditation, before tea. So we will put the groups in the board outside. But yeah, just for you to be aware that tomorrow this is different than what the schedule says, and the groups will be at 4:45. There will also be Q&As in the evening. So between lunchtime and, I think, we will put a basket outside in the, also the notice board area around lunchtime, and it will be there until after dinner, until the first sitting of the evening, I think. And you can leave us questions, and then that will become the evening session. You don't have to provide a question. Spend the day thinking, what will I ask? You know, I have now a duty to provide a question. But if something comes up during our instructions or talks, or something you don't have time or you don't wish to bring into the group meeting, you can put this into the baskets, and then we'll have a fun time in the evening, trying to the best of our abilities, respond to those questions or comments. And anything you need, you can always leave us a note up there, and remember to sign them. I'm sure that the coordinators have already said this, but sometimes you receive a note and you don't know who wrote it. There's no name and little you can do, unless I knew all of your handwriting, which I don't. And an example of this, and talking about listening to one's needs, if you need sometimes to lie down in the meditation hall, please leave us a note explaining. It will be very good for us to know. I think that's all in terms of practicalities. Is there any practical question? Anything that is not clear? Okay. So then we will end the evening with some meditation. Why not?
You've been sitting for an hour already, so if you wish, please have a little stretch. We're only going to do a short meditation, so unless you're bursting for the loo, perhaps stay in the hall, and we'll just stretch yourself a little bit, however feels good for you. Necessarily sitting in the same position again. See what your body wants to do now. Maybe loosening any clothing, or wrapping around a shawl, or taking one off. Really starting to listen in and respect your body. Stretch of the back or rolling of the shoulders. And if you're ready and if it's comfortable for you, just gently closing your eyes. touch with your inner world. Just getting to know your body and mind. And with our eyes closed, we sometimes notice one of our limbs is pressed against another. Maybe your knees are bent too tightly. So, listening in now with your inner eye. And just making perhaps very subtle adjustments. Give yourself a sense of groundedness and also a sense of spaciousness. Feeling the connection with your cushion or your chair, your feet on the ground, if you're sitting on a chair. And feeling through the spine to the top of the head and the connection with the sky. Perhaps like your favourite tree, in my case it is a pine. A Lebanese pine. Tall yet, bending with the wind. And just allowing a few slightly deeper breaths than your ordinary breath. Nothing too forced, but just allowing your belly, your ribcage to swell. And noticing the relaxation as you breathe out. Perhaps sensing your body gently dropping a little bit further into the ground. Whilst maintaining that sense of uprightness. And see if you can regard your body as a friend, as though you're looking inward with beautiful smile of friendship, of warmth. Of receptivity. And care. Just getting to know this friend that's your body. By bringing your awareness, your kind awareness to the top of the head. Perhaps imagining your awareness like the beautiful golden light of the sun just shining gently down at the top of your head. Illuminating whatever sensation you experience there. And that golden sunshine carries with it the warmth of kindness and friendship. Allowing you to soften into those feelings. And a sense of kindness, of respect. Nothing you have to do. This sunshine just keeps on soaking through your body, across your forehead. Onto your eyelids, smoothing out any tension in the brow. Allowing your cheeks to relax, perhaps your jaw as well. As though you're just alone, feeling safe, cozy, and just basking in the sun. Noticing any sensations anywhere on your face, your lips, your jaw, the back of your head. You might find the sunshine naturally starts soaking through your neck, onto your shoulders, into those knotty parts. Inviting your shoulders to relax. Perhaps noticing the space around your shoulders. Allowing any tension to naturally unwind as your shoulders receive the light and the warmth of the sun. Spreading down your arms, noticing any sensations on the top of your arms, your elbows, your lower arms, right down to your hands, with an awareness that carries with it this beautiful sense of friendship and warmth. Perhaps noticing your body respond, maybe tingling feelings or the coolness of the air. Just receiving whatever you experience. Right down to your fingers, your fingertips. Soaking up these golden rays of light and warmth through your chest. Noticing any sensations in your chest area. Perhaps even noticing the gentle rise and fall as the breath comes in and out of your body. Effortlessly. spreading down to the diaphragm, the belly, noticing any sensations on the surface or even on the inside of your body, just giving them kindness and warmth. Whether they're pleasant or unpleasant. See if you can allow them to be. Give them space. Noticing your back. Imagining your back now being bathed, basking in the light and the warmth of this beautiful sunshine of mindfulness and kindness. Seeping right through into any knotty muscles, just shining there, giving them warmth. Of your body, the seat of the trunk, the hips, the buttocks. And just receiving the sensations there, maybe pressure or heaviness, heat, whatever it is. Giving them space, allowing them to be. Inside, through the muscles into the bone. Imagining your body just soft, able to receive this warmth. Allow it to flow wherever it will, without any force at all. Coming to your knees. Getting interested in any sensations in your knees. Often different sensations, maybe a little more intense. Sending kindness and friendship towards your knees. Allowing them to relax. however they're feeling now. Feeling into your lower legs, the calves, the shins. Into your ankles. Into your feet, the heels, the soles, the tops of your feet, right down to the toes. Until your whole body is soaked through with this kind awareness. As though the whole body is basking in the light and the warmth of the gentle sun. Getting a sense of your body as a whole. And just tuning in to the sense of relaxation, the pleasure of feeling a little bit more relaxed. Perhaps just releasing any places where there's still some intentional holding, contraction, tension. Just noticing whether you need it there. What it would take. Just allow it to relax. And just connecting with any sensation that's experienced as pleasant. Maybe mildly pleasant, maybe intensely so. Maybe just an absence of pain and distress. However much calm and relaxation you feel, smiling into that with a sense of gratitude. Contented and easily satisfied. Not wishing to be anywhere else in the world. And just noticing the breathing. any feelings of contentment or ease?
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.